Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for waiting. At this time, we would like to welcome everyone to Oracle's second quarter 2020 results conference call. Today we have with us Mr. Gianfranco Truffello, CFO of Oracle. We would like to inform you that this event is being recorded and all participants will be in a listen-only mode during the company's presentation. After the company's remarks are completed, there will be a Q&A session. At that time, further instructions will be given. Should any participant need assistance during this call, please press star 0 to reach the operator. Before proceeding, let me mention that this presentation contains forward-looking statements that are based on the beliefs, assumptions, and expectations of the management of the company based on currently available information. They involve risks and uncertainties because they relate to future events or expectations and therefore depend on circumstances that may or may not occur in the future. Investors should understand that general economic conditions, industry conditions, and other operating factors could also affect the future results of Oracle and could cause results to differ materially from those expressed in such forward-looking statements. For further discussion of these risks and uncertainties, investors should refer to quarterly and annual Oracle filings with the Chilean CMF and U.S. SEC. The company undertakes no obligation to publicly update or revise any forward-looking statements due to new information or future developments. Now I'll turn the conference over to Mr. Gianfranco Truffello, CFO of Oracle. Mr. Gianfranco, you may begin your conference.
Okay. Hello, everyone. Welcome to this conference call for the results of the second quarter of this year. As usual, we're going to start with the main figures of the company, and then we will jump into more detailed results and outlook for the different business divisions, and we'll end up with a round of Q&A. So if we can jump into page 4 to see the summary of the main figures of the company, we can see there that we had a reduction of almost 7% of revenues compared to the first quarter of this year. We end up with $1.05 billion of revenue. Our net income was a negative $56 million, which is $26 million more of losses compared to the $30 million that we lost in the first quarter of this year. Our EBITDA went up 6% to $206 million, and our net leverage went up to 5.9 from 4.9, they basically because of a lower last 12 months EBITDA, and also an increase of about $200 million in our net debt. So if we go to page 5 and discuss a little bit what happened with our revenues, we can see that we had an increase in the pulp revenues of about 10%. That was basically due to an increase of the same amount in sales volume. Our average prices, as we're going to see later on, were roughly the same compared to the first quarter. A different story was in the wood products division, where we had a decrease of almost 20% in revenues, or about $126 million. And this was, again, caused by a sharp decrease in volume, caused by the pandemic that we're going to explain later on, in sales volume, especially in countries like Brazil and Argentina. So if you can see there, the division between our sales, pulp was 47.4% and wood products almost 50%. In terms of cost of sales, we had a decrease of 5.2%. That is basically caused by a decrease in volume, especially in the wood products division that made some of the chemical costs and some wages and salaries decrease in cost of sales. We had an increase in timber cost, 4.5%, because the balance between the increase in pulp, which demands more consumption of timber than wood, made the total cost of timber go up by 4.5%. In terms of unit cost of sales, we had a slight decrease, very small increase in softwood, a decrease of 3.2% in hardwood, and a 4% increase in unbleached softwood pulp. That was basically due to the consumption of inventory of high-cost production made in the first quarter when we had some stoppages in one of our mills in Liechtenstein. Moving to page 6, I'm talking a little bit more about some other expenses. Administrative expenses increased $6.7 million, and this was basically because that we accounted for some payments of software licenses that are done usually in this period. So it's one-time payment of software licenses like Microsoft or SAP that are not done the rest of the year. So that this would compensate in the future. And we have, of course, a decrease in wages, salaries, and severance indemnities of about 5%. That is basically due to exchange rate in the local currency of the salaries that are accounted for. In distribution cost, a decrease of 10.6%. That is, again, explained by a freight cost, a decrease of 17%, and again, explained by a lower volume, especially wood products, that explain this difference. Page 7, other income. We had an increase of $12.4 million, or almost 22.4%. And the main explanation for this was the accrual of a tax recovery of about $21 million that was obtained in Brazil. We have a decision by the Superior Tribunal Court of Justice in Brazil changing the base and of the calculation of tax credit of PIS Confins, which is like the VAT tax, that help us accrue almost $29 million, which of those $8 million goes to financial income, and $21 million was accounting as other income. So that's why you see that increase in this quarter. So this is those accrued as a one-time in Brazil. We had all other results done for subsidies obtained because of COVID-19, subsidies in Argentina, and a reversal of provision in the trial in Mexico. And the counterpart of that was a decrease in the gains from changes in value of biological assets, of a reduction of $16 million, which was a reversal of a provision done in Chile this quarter. In terms of other expenses, we had an increase of 12%, and this is basically provisions for deterioration of property, plant, and equipment and related to the closure of Line 3 of our Albany mill in the U.S. that was closed, and that is $13 million that was because of that. And we had also a decrease in forestry fire losses provisions of almost 100%. So we had almost nothing, and the first quarter we had a $5 million provision for fire losses. And page 8, looking now at the summary of our financial statements, income statement, sorry, we already talked about revenue, cost of sales, other income. So the thing to notice here is the increase in financial income that I already explained because of the accrual of the part of the Brazilian tax that is part of their inflation and interest rate. We had a decrease in financial cost, and we had a loss in our participation in associates, and basically it's a loss registered by our affiliate Sonae Arauco in Europe. And then we have a big exchange rate difference loss of $27 million, and it's basically because of some movements in the currencies, especially the Brazilian real and the Chilean peso, making losses in our income statement. So also we had a $19.4 million positive effect tax because of the negative result before tax that we are accruing in our income statement. Page 9, we can look at the evolution of our EBITDA. As I mentioned before, we had a $206 million EBITDA for this quarter, which is a margin of 20%, going up from the 17% accrued in the first quarter. And the division of that is $96 million obtained in pulp, $67 million in wood products, and $72 million in our forestry division. And the rest are consolidated adjustments and others. And we can see the movement from the first quarter to the second quarter explained by a higher EBITDA of pulp, again, caused by an increase in volume, and then very stable EBITDAs in wood products and forestry. Page 11, now going a little bit into in detail for the pulp division. You can see in the first graph that we experienced very, very stable pricing during the year, I would say, and with a reduction in June, especially in long fiber. This is the index prices for Europe and China, and you can see there that in the case of China, or the spread between the indexes was about $121 in this quarter, and the previous quarter was $112. Regarding inventories, on the bottom right side of the slide, you can see that compared to last quarter, where there's an increase in inventory in terms of days of supply. But if we look at the 1 year ago, it's more or less stable in terms of softwood and a sharp decrease between hardwood from 72 days to 49 days. In terms of the growing of demand, we can see that globally in the 6 months of this year compared to the first 6 months of last year, we had a 6% increase, and it's basically carried out by China, 8%, and counterbalanced by a decrease of 3% in West Europe. Page 12, we can see the increase in EBITDA in the pulp division, which was quite low in the first quarter because of lower volume, and of course a huge decrease compared to a year ago where we had much better prices. You can see there that the decrease in volume is similar to this quarter to 1 year ago, 10.2%, but the average prices are 25% less than that were 1 year ago. You can see there in the production and sales volume that our production was quite stable, but we sold more this quarter, so decreasing inventories in this quarter. In terms of market, of course, the quarter was very challenging because of the effects of the pandemic, COVID-19, and these were more widespread than the first quarter, which were affected more China and Asia, and as we all know. So it hit the demand for paper, especially printing and writing. Tissue market was better, but the effect on printing and writing was that some integrated paper producers started to switch to produce market pulp in the spot market and contribute to some increase in global inventory and some pressure over pricing. In China, the quarter began with strong tissue demand, but it weakened when restrictions eased. Also, this quarter is normally affected by seasonality, especially at the end of the quarter when we start going into the summer month. And you can see in the graph over there that prices were quite stable, even with some increase in softwood at the beginning of the quarter. But in June, we had a big reduction in softwood, going from $600 to $555, and $20 of decrease in hardwood as of June. Page 13, looking a little bit more into the future, we can say that we are still facing uncertainty in the market. It seems to be that prices are stabilizing a little bit in printing and writing and tissue. We are ending the summer season somehow, and we need to see how the market develops and demand after in the third quarter, fourth quarter. Normally, in this part of the year, I would say during summer, The tissue segment will counterbalance somehow the seasonality effect because there's more demand for away from home. You go to restaurants, people are traveling, going to hotels. But this year is different, of course. They're almost shut down, so we haven't seen this counterbalance effect of the away from home tissue market in summer seasons. So we need to see what happens in this third quarter to see if prices will be able to recover. Even though we saw stable prices from June to July, you can see there in the graph that the prices were stable in the same month, but we were able to raise prices by $10 in August in China. So prices went down by $10 in both fibers, going to $5.65 in softwood and $4.65 in hardwood. It's a small increase, but anyway, it's an increase that helped us a little bit. In terms of pulp mills' days of stoppage, in the second quarter we had only the stoppage of Noraldea for 10 days, and we are not looking for stoppages of our mills in the third quarter of this year. In the fourth quarter, we will have the annual stoppage of Constitución for 13 days. Alto Paraná and Montes del Plata will have in November the annual stoppage. This is very common in most of the market. We have seen less annual maintenance because companies are trying to push into the future this stoppage because also of a lack of international engineering assistance in the stoppages because of the lack of ability to fly to the different parts. Page 14, wood products. We can see here that that we had a big reduction in volume, 24% in panels, especially. It was not so big in solid wood, meaning some timber and plywood, only 5%. So this made the sales of panels go sharply down, especially during the month of April and May, where we demand wasn't there, and we were facing quarantines and restrictions, especially in Latin America. We had some month of April and May, for example, in Argentina, the mills were completely shut down for 2 months. And in Brazil also, we were operating probably at 30% during those months. In Chile, Mexico, and the U.S., the situation was better. Chile was producing probably 100% in MDF. Particle board was probably producing a 50% or mainly in Teno, and plywood was about 80%. Mexico was a little bit delayed the effect, so we were producing almost 100% for April and May, but in June, July, we had to reduce capacity to about 60%. And in the U.S., the situation was better, about 80% capacity between April and May, in MDF and about 60% in particle board. So situation was difficult, but the market rebounded very quickly, and now we are with very good demand in the wood products division. The effect of the EBITDA is not so big because we had the effect of this tax recovery of VAT in Brazil that balanced the wood products division. In terms of size of plywood, 4% decrease, and prices increased a little bit because of good demand, especially in North America. Page 15, you can see there the production and sales volume, and in the graph you can see in panels the reductions of production and sales. We were able to not to increase our stocks because we were very quickly to stop mills, especially in Argentina, in Brazil, and some shifts in other countries. So we were able to balance that and not increase stocks. In some timber, there was a little bit more of stocks building, but not so much as is reflected there because production is the raw material for some products that has a different productivity. So it always happens that you produce more than you sell. Plywood was quite stable. We were able to produce more, and sales were quite balanced to the last quarter. In page 16, in terms of outlook, what we are seeing is in particle board and MDF, in the North American market, which is our biggest market of 55%, that after having a very complex second quarter, there was a big improvement in sales volume and prices. And we are expecting to reach normal levels during August. And we are selling even more than the budget, the original budget that we did, because we, as I told you, we had experiencing a very big rebound in sales, especially panels, because the people are demanding more products, spending more time at home, at refurbishing their homes, preparing for home office. So we are very happy with the demand of the wood products and how fast they rebounded after the low demand periods of April and May. In remanufactured wood products, we have seen increases in sales volume and prices in the past few weeks. Also affected in terms of prices, also benefited because of some anti-dumping duties to some producers from China and Brazil. And the market also is improving in plywood, with increases in sales and prices that we help us being very optimistic with what will happen in the future. Also, a couple of days ago, we saw the numbers of housing starts from June, and it's a 1.5 million annualized housing starts, which is a very good number, a big rebound from the drop that we experienced a couple of months ago. So that is also a good sign that people start thinking of using the low rates of mortgages and build new houses, and spending more time at home will mean that people are thinking of getting a home rather than an apartment, and that will increase demand for wood, for sure. In page 17, now talking a little bit about Central and South America. Again, we have seen a big rebound in Brazil. It remains complex, but there was a very, very good improvement from July on, and we expect volume and prices to continue normalizing in the coming months, and we are very optimistic to the coming month in this market. Also in Argentina, we saw a good demand, and this is somehow also affected by the pressure to buy something that will be close to having dollars at hand, which is the expectation of the devaluation in Argentina, all the difference between the official rate of exchange and the black market, which has a lot of difference. So people are trying to get hold of whatever seems similar to having dollars. So that could be affecting demand in Argentina. In Chile, sales have been below normal levels, but we expect to have improvements. There's more activity is starting to happen in construction. We have been in a very strict quarantine here in Chile, but now we are seeing that there is more people going to work and more construction being approved to work. So we expect that will start to help. But anyhow, we have some political uncertainty here in Chile. There's elections going on for the plebiscite for the new constitution happening in October, so that could help a little bit the expectations and the growth. Now going to more marginal markets like Asia and Europe, prices have been more or less stable or improved a little bit depending on the country, and we have some difficulties in getting some logistical for some countries because of shipping delays. In Europe, the positive trends of plywood continues, basically because of the decrease of supply coming from Brazil. In the Middle East, demand and prices expected to remain stable. Page 18, now looking at the free cash flow. The things to remark here is that we had a better free cash flow, less negative than the first quarter, and this is basically because of less impact of the working capital variation. We had a more stable working capital this quarter. We had to pay more interest anyhow because we had interest payments coming during the second quarter. But we had a recovery of taxes. I mean, we apart from the things that I mentioned, that is accruing of new tax credit, we had a pay of our payment from the Chilean tax authority of about $70 million, which is part of the prepayment of tax done during 2019, and we expect to receive more during the year to complete about $170 million of taxes to be obtained from the government. Another thing that helped this quarter was that we had less capex, from $445 to $384 million. So if you look, anyhow, we had a negative free cash flow, so our net debt went up from $4.8 billion to $5 billion. Okay, and now moving to page 19. I already mentioned that our net leverage has been going up from 4.9 to 5.9, but this is basically due to 14% lower last 12-month EBITDA quarter over quarter. This is basically explained that we are getting into a worse 12-month than the quarter before because of the good results obtained in 2019. So this is normal that the leverage will go up because of the evolution of EBITDA. Cash was more or less stable, increasing a little bit. You can see in the table on the right that we went from $1.1 billion to $1.2 billion in cash. Our gross debt was about $6.3 billion. In page 20, we can see our debt amortization schedule. And in 2020, we had $571 million. And if we talk a little bit about our bank obligations, which are $321, we had a pre-export financing of $150 million that is due in September that we will need to decide if we roll over that or not, depending on our cash position. We had $135 million in bank loans in the MDP and other subsidiaries that are going to be paid normally, and some $31 million in leasings that we consolidate. In terms of bond obligations, in September we have to pay about $200 million in amortizations plus $47 million in interest payments. And those are for local bonds issued in the U.S., and we will pay those normally in September. The rest of the amortization schedule is more or less the same as last quarter, and we have a very light 2021 with only $200 million and then $345 million in 2022. This is because of the liability management done last year. Now, moving to material facts and news. First of all, in page 22, just to show you all the efforts that we are doing to work under the COVID situation, we were, as you know, declared as an essential business by the authorities in most of the countries we operate. And we are following strict guidelines of issued by the health authorities, and we are basically going to doing test, track, and isolating of cases that we found. We also done a lot of work with communities, and we have made donations to different communities in order to help them. And we have more than 400 volunteers of the company delivering boxes of essential goods of families, and more than 5,200 boxes have been delivered. We, as most of the companies, are doing safety protocols, which mean social distancing, home office policies, body temperature measuring, and all that. So we at this time, we have most of all of our administrative personnel working from home, about 2,000 people, and all of our facilities are producing, and our meals are producing with people at the site with all the prevention measures in order to prevent contagious by COVID-19. Page 23, as we announced previously, on May 19, the shareholders meeting approved the proposal by the board of directors to increase the capital of Arauco of up to about $700 million. And we expect to receive about $250 million this year, probably September, October, and the rest, $450 million, probably during 2021, depending on the conditions and the requirements during that year. That will depend, of course, on the price of pulp and the evolution of the capex of the company. This capital increase is aimed to increase and strengthen our Arauco's financial position, of course. page 24, we want to show you that we have a very strong liquidity. As I mentioned earlier, we have a $1.2 billion in cash, but also we had this revolving credit facility for an amount of $325 that we haven't drawn yet, and it's available, and is available until February 2025. And also, we, as I told you, we are expecting to receive $250 million as a capital increase. So that is a total of expected liquidity of about $1.8 billion. Page 25, a MAPA project update. The progress is about, as of the end of July, is about 57%. We are showing there some recent photographs of the mill construction. You can see there the recovery boiler being erected and some of the transportation of the big equipment on the right. This is a feed water tank for the boiler. So about 200 tons equipment being transported in the local roads on the way to the mill. So as we have mentioned, we are expecting to start up line three about mid-year 2012. At that time, line one will be permanently shut down. Line one, remember, is 300,000 tons of eucalyptus, and the new line will be a 1.5 million tons mill. Currently, we are working with a normal staff of about 8,500 people on site, and about 2,000 of them are employed from local communities, which is a very good sign of improving the local employment in the Arauco region. And of course, we are making a lot of efforts to prevent contagious COVID-19 in the site. So we have done more than 13,000 tests, including PCR and rapid tests, in order to find out earlier any contagious of people and isolate them in order not to spread the contagious in the site. And now the last slide, page 26. We during June, we started production of the pulp bales of dissolving pulp in our Valdivia mill. That means the completion of the dissolving pulp project. And the brand is Arauco Create, and the production has progressed as planned, and we are currently sent samples to our clients, and we have received very good feedback from the quality of the product. We were able to produce about 20,000 tons in June, and in July we produced about 25,000 tons. So we are very happy with the products, and we are receiving good feedback, and we expect to start selling as we receive the final approval from our clients. The mill, of course, as we have mentioned before, is going to be producing some campaigns of paper grade during the year. We're not expecting to produce full dissolving pulp because we want to maintain not so big inventory of dissolving pulp, and since we need to test the product first, we will mix it with some paper grade production in order to balance the stocks. Okay, that's all I have for my presentation. So at this time, I would like to hear if you have any questions that would like to be answered by me. Thanks.
Thank you. The floor is now open for questions from investors and analysts. If you have a question, please press star 1 on your touch-tone phone at this time. If at any point your question is answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star 2. Questions will be taken in the order that they are received. We do ask that when you pose your question, you pick up your handset to provide optimum sound quality. Please hold while we poll for questions. Our first question comes from George Staphos with Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Hi, Gianfranco. Thanks for taking my question. Thanks for the details. And congratulations on the progress. I was hoping perhaps you could comment a bit further on what you are seeing, what you are hearing from your customers on the state of the dissolving pulp market, and recognizing there are no guarantees in life, how much dissolving pulp do you think you'll be able to sell in the second half And early on, what are your expectations for 2021? And then I wanted to switch gears. Can you remind us on pricing, what was going on at the end of second quarter for you such that you saw a sharper drop-off in softwood pricing relative to hardwood pricing? And then I'll have one quick follow-on after that.
Yes, thanks, George, for the question. Well, I mean, we're focused on supplying our customer for testing and focusing on getting good the quality and getting good production and cost right now. We know that prices for dissolving pulp has gone down. I mean, they're still much better than the prices for paper grade anyhow, but they are levels probably $600. So. And I don't have a number for sales in the dissolving. We know much better what we want to produce, but I don't want to anticipate because it will depend on the acceptance of the test of our clients, and that will move a lot the volume in terms of if we get a good acceptance, we will of course sell a lot, but I will not like to adventure that before having the complete result of a test of our clients. In terms of the outlook, yes, we saw a reduction that was bigger in softwood, but what I've been hearing is that the market's a little bit better for softwood rather than hardwood. That's more or less the feeling, that they already decreased more. The spread is now probably at $80 now that it was more than $100, so probably has more ground there. But anyhow, we feel that the hardwood price is already very low. I mean, we personally, I don't think there's a lot of room. There's of course less room now of decreasing than there were before. And I think that the probability of going up, of course, is higher when you start from a lower ground. But I think that we could see increases in prices in the rest of the year. It will depend how we start the high season. But those increases will be low. I mean, I don't expect big increases, very quick increases in prices. But I think that the probability of going below the levels that we are seeing now in hardwood are quite low.
Okay, Gianfranco, thanks for that. And then my follow-ons, and I'll turn it over. You know, back to pulp pricing, can you talk a little bit about why you're seeing perhaps more room for inflation, a better outlook, you know, use whatever phrasing you'd like. In terms of softwood for the balance of the year, recognizing that you see, you know, both products improving. And then related to that, are you seeing any pickup in demand from China for unbleached kraft, you know, above and beyond what you'd been seeing earlier in the year? And if so, well, either way, could you comment on what the outlook there is? Thank you, and I'll turn it over.
Well, my expectation on softwood are based basically on the spread between fibers, and also there's a lot of, I mean, I've read that production from Suzano has gone up. They are lowering stocks, so there's more supply of hardwood reaching the ports in China. So that could put more pressure in prices going up. I mean, some speculation by Chinese buyers is that they expect prices not to go up, so they are demanding more, but probably they want to increase their own stocks. And so as you will expect more volume coming into China because of decreasing inventories of Suzano and higher production, there's not really a lot happening in of that in softwood. In softwood, you see less supply also. So the situation is different, I think. That's why I feel a little bit more optimistic on softwood, the decrease in prices, and also you don't see that more volume reaching the market as you can see in hardwood. Of course, depending on the differential in prices, there could be some substitution over there, but that's hard to tell right now.
Understood.
Regarding unbleached, I don't have so much visibility. I think that the situation is more difficult. I mean, ambridge prices were very similar to softwood in the last quarter. So, and that is not normal. So that's why probably as softwood prices go down, ambridge prices will suffer more and will go probably more than softwood down. But it's a smaller market. I have less visibility on that recently.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Carlos De Alda with Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Yes, hello. Good afternoon, Gianfranco. So my first question has to do with how do you see cost trends in the coming quarters? The second question is the expectations of further with the expectations on the difference between your production levels and your sales levels. Year to date, you have produced around 35,000 to 40,000 more than what you have sold. You don't have any scheduled maintenance downtime in the third quarter. How do you see the movement of your own inventories and what is the level that the company has today in stocks? Do you think it is above or below the normalized level? And then finally, talking about the leverage of the company and the timing of the equity offering, could you maybe elaborate a little bit as to why this two-phase approach, where you have 250 million, you don't know yet when, even though it was May when the equity increase was approved. And then the other 450 million, it sort of seems like you are telling the market, don't worry, we have this approved, but you're not really committing to it in a big way. Or I'm reading this incorrectly, and it is committed, and it will happen, the 450 million in 2021. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Carlos. Regarding the cost trends, the coming quarters, I would say that we should see good cost levels. I mean, if you look at the exchange rate where it is, the cost of the fuel, chemicals, and we expect to have good production because we're not gonna have stoppages. I would say that we should see a reduction in cost in our mills. That's what I would say normally. Normally, there are not big movements in our cost. We don't have the situation of the Brazilians that they have more cost in local currency and they tend to move more than we. We have accounting in dollars, so you don't expect very big decreases in cost, but I will say that the trend should be as long as we can produce normally without any unexpected stoppages, we should see a reduction in cost level. Regarding the inventory, you know that our strategy is always to sell what we produce. We don't speculate in terms of inventory. So the movements you see quarter over quarter depends on shipments. Sometimes you have a big ship departing just at the end of the quarter, and then you can have also lower demand in some months that will make inventories go up and then go down again. So don't expect on the long term, on the whole year, very big movements in inventories. Our levels are quite normal at this time, not very significant, probably 35 days of supply. That is very low compared, considering that our company is very far away from the market. And that is including all the, in the vessels, in our warehouses, everywhere. So I wouldn't expect any big effect in that, and we will not change our strategy of what we produce every day, we sell more or less every day. And regarding the level of leverage, first of all, there's no an equity offering from Arauco and probably not from Copec. I mean, they are promising the $700 million to Arauco, and they're going to fund it by selling some assets that they have announced and probably debt, but they're not planning, as I know, to have an equity offering. And that amount is committed, I mean, $700. What we have said is that depending on pricing and evolution of CAPEX, we'll see if we need it or not. This is committed, and we will see it next year. The 250 for this year is committed. The other ones will depend if we need it or not. But if we need them, COPEC will give us that money. So that is not any doubt on that. We don't need the money, the 700 million right now. It would be not a very use of the cash at this moment of time. And things can change very quickly in the pulp market.
Understood. And just for modeling purposes, is it more likely that the 250 will come in September or in October?
Probably September. We have a lot of amortization in September, but the evolution of our cash has been better than we forecast every month. So probably we can pass September and do it in October. It's something that we need to coordinate with COPEC. It won't make a lot of difference in terms of the probably we'll jump from one quarter to the other, but I would say that probably in those 2 months.
All right. Thank you very much.
Good luck.
Our next question comes from Thiago Lofiego with Bradesco. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you. Gianfranco, two questions here. Just back to George's point on the pulp market dynamics. From your comments, it seems like your base case is for stable hardwood pulp prices and slightly higher softwood pulp prices in the second half. So I just want to confirm if that's a fair assumption here as per your comments. And also, what's your view on capacity shutdowns? Why do you think it's taking so long for the high-cost producers to shut down? Do you see any signs of capacity, you know, adjustments or shutdowns in China and in Canada? I mean, if you could make any comments on that would be great. And the second question about the wood panels market in Brazil, do you see any price increase opportunities in the second half? And do you think that demand can hold at current levels even when the government incentives are out of the picture? So how do you see the market evolving post you know those incentives? Thank you.
Okay, Thiago. Yes, I would say that the basis scenario is roughly that what you mentioned. I mean, I would expect stable prices in hardwood, probably some increases, but moderate increases in the coming month. And I see more probability of better scenario in the long fiber, in the softwood market. So I agree with you. That's more or less my scenario. In terms of capacity shutdowns, that's true. I mean, we haven't seen any shutdowns, and it's strange, but in a way, you can assume that this is a lot of game theory going on. I mean, companies waiting for other to shut down first. Most of the small companies that are usually the high cost producers have, in proportion, lower variable cost than fixed cost. So because they are close to their clients, so there's no transportation cost there. So they are, most of them are covering variable costs and contributing to fixed costs. So they prefer to wait. And when you see that prices are low, the probability of going up is higher. So that's something going on there that companies are preferring to continue as long as they can generate a little bit of cash to contribute to fixed costs and delay the decision until something happens. So I agree with you. We haven't seen any big shutdowns. Some movements of companies moving to fluff pulp or trying to change to other markets, but not significantly shutdowns of capacity. We'll see how long that will last. If at a certain point the owners of those companies will decide not to continue, but at this point, I don't expect a lot of changes in terms of big shutdown of capacity overall. One thing that could happen is that since most of the company has delayed the annual maintenance of their mills, we could have some not predicted failures in equipment going on in the year that could affect somehow the production. But that is very hard to predict, but you could expect that if you extend maintenance, that could be more probable. And lastly, demand...
Gianfranco, if I may here, I'm sorry to interrupt, just on this subject. Do you see a possibility that some of these companies that, you know, have postponed maintenance shutdowns for the second half, like usually they take 10 or 15 days. Do you see the possibility of them taking, you know, more extended periods of shutdowns because of the very low price environment? Do you think that's a scenario at all?
Yes, I think so. That's more probable because, I mean, since you're losing less by not selling, and also because that some companies have decided to do the annual shutdowns with their own employees and bringing less people from abroad to decrease cost, and also because it is very difficult to get personnel to fly to your meals. So that means that probably the cost of the maintenance is lower, but you take it longer. So I think that will be lower volume because of more extended shutdowns coming in the second part of the year. And regarding Brazil, well, it's very difficult. I mean, in this scenario of high volatility, to think if that the demand will hold to the rest of the year. I think we'll need to analyze it month by month because, I mean, for us it was very strange how quickly things rebounded in Brazil, in Argentina, because we were not expecting that. Let's hope that continues, but there's a lot of things going on. You know that here in the South Hemisphere, we have not faced yet the second round of epidemic and closures that happens in some countries in the North Hemisphere. So depending on that, I would think that will change the perspective of demand. If we have another period of quarantines in Brazil, in Argentina, it's happening right now already, or in Chile, that could hurt demand. And people probably are anticipating that and trying to buy a lot of things right now to improve their home offices just before the second round comes. So for me, difficult to get a sense of that. Depending on demand, if the capacity is more utilized, probably will be more easy to raise prices. But I don't have a lot of visibility of the details on that in Brazil.
That's great. Thank you, Gianfranco.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Hernan Kisluk with MetLife. Please go ahead.
Good morning, Gianfranco. Thank you for the call and taking my question. It's a kind of a follow-up on the previous question on leverage and capitalization. So I think that we might be witnessing now the peak in leverage, but going forward, a quick reduction in leverage will depend not only on starting MAPA on time, but also on the evolution of pool prices and the outlook. I don't know, it doesn't seem to be great, or nobody seems to be expecting a quick rebound in prices right now. So my question is, on the options that you still have available to converge to investment grade metrics, and maybe also in your conversations with the rating agencies, what other options, if needed, could you have at hand, and what other levers could you pull if you risk maybe further rating actions from maybe some peer or other agencies?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, we don't expect big increases in prices this year. Probably the environment next year will be different and we will have more volume. So we expect that we will be able to deleverage during 2021 because less capex volume coming from MAPA, but also dissolving pulp, selling more 100%. And let's hope that we have some increases in prices, and I would say that we'll have a little bit of better cost structure. But, of course, we have this capital increase that will help us decrease our leverage in a higher pace. But, I mean, the most operating agencies have a view that they need to wait until the MAPA project starts to produce and sell. So they're waiting for probably the end of 2021. There's no really a hurry to test the measures before that. And also we have We are making a big effort, as most of the companies are doing, to contain costs, SG&A, and we have a very aggressive plan in order to try to reduce the cost and or to maintain the cost that we have been able to experience during this pandemic. I mean, none of us is traveling. We have saved a lot. The exchange rate is helping. And also we have other options like selling forests, for example. We have this program that we're analyzing in order to decrease a little bit the forest that we have in Chile that we don't need. I mean, we are not really using it, and we could obtain cash from that. There's a lot of demand from investment funds to invest in this type of assets, especially because of the alternative returns they can get from financial alternatives. So I think that could happen probably not right now, but probably at the end of the year, beginning of that year, or next year, we can exercise that option if we need it.
Okay, good. Yeah. And a second question, if I may, regarding MAPA project. Is it advancing according to the original plan? And also, if you could provide maybe an updating number for CAPEX, given that the effect depreciation might be helping on that front.
Sorry, the effect of what? The last part of the question?
The peso depreciation might be helping, I guess, on the capital front.
Yes, I mean, regarding the advance, of course, because of the pandemic at the beginning of I would say at the end of the first quarter, where we had to adjust the way we were handling the 8,000 people at the site, we need to stop for 15 days, then starting again to... For the normal rhythm took some time, so, a couple of quarters ago we were thinking of announcing hitting the second quarter, and now we hope that we will be at the beginning of the quarter, and now we are facing more at the end of the quarter because of the reality of the advance in terms to get the rhythm back because of the pandemic. It's quite challenging. I mean, to have 9,000 people working at one site of construction in Chile with the pandemic, and we have been able to do that very successfully, and we hope that we can continue to do that. But it's not easy. Regarding the depreciation of the peso, of course, there's a portion of the investment that is with construction companies that are denominated in Chilean peso, and that is helping us to have lower cost in construction. Part of that, so a portion of that we were hedged before, so that is we cannot enjoy completely the exchange rate, but a portion of that we are enjoying in terms of getting a lower construction cost in terms of U.S. dollars.
Okay, thank you very much.
Our next question comes from Miguel Garcia with Citi. Please go ahead.
Hi, Gianfranco. Good morning. Thank you for taking my question. Regarding the tax reimbursements, can you confirm the total proceeds that you expect to receive and how much have you already credited for? And second, going back to the potential asset sale of some of your forests. What do you expect ballpark figure proceeds could be from that? Thank you.
Well, regarding the refunds, tax refunds, in Chile we got the approval of $170 million of tax refunds for prepayment of taxes done during 2019 that were over the tax rate that we need to pay. From those, we have received $66 million. But we don't have a definite date for the rest of us. It will be probably during this year, but we want to be careful in terms of having a date yet. We also have a tax refund that will come in North America, so about $30 million. And the one in Brazil was a credit for VAT payments for the future. It's not really that we got the money, $20 million, but it's a tax credit that we can use, and that we create for that in the balance of our tax credit in the balance sheet. In terms of sale of forests, I prefer not to anticipate that because it will depend on the amount of hectares that we offer for sale if we decide to do so. So I would prefer not to give an amount, but just to give you an example, in 2014 we sold 11,000 hectares and we got $90 million. And so probably, I don't know if we're going to get the same amount per hectare, but it's very easy for us to get a couple of $100 million by selling an amount of hectares. So it will be an amount significant, but I will not like to give an exact amount, but it will depend on the amount of the number of hectares that we decide to sell and the competition, all that. So I prefer not to give a definite number yet.
Again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star then one. Our next question is a follow-up from George Staphos with Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Hey, Gianfranco, one quick one. Recognizing that most of your wood products in North America really don't go to single-family construction as much as related markets and obviously repair or remodel too, you know, there's been some discussion in trade circles that you may start to see some demand destruction from the builders as their build packages, which get priced once a quarter, get repriced in mid-September. And so then in turn, that could lead to maybe weakening in demand. I don't know if you have visibility into that, but have you heard anything related to that topic and, for that matter, what it might mean for your business in North America in the coming months? Thanks and good luck in the quarter.
To be honest, I haven't heard anything about that. You are correct in terms of composite panels. Those goes to refurnishing and furniture, all that, and the wood products. A portion goes to construction, but we have a lot of molding sales and plywood for appearance grade. And those are more also for remodeling and could be affected by that. But to be honest, I haven't heard anything about that effect in construction companies that you mentioned.
This concludes the question and answer session. At this time, I would like to turn the floor back over to Mr. Gianfranco Truffello for any closing remarks.
Okay, thank you all, and we will probably meet in the middle of November for the results of the third quarter, and so in the meantime, as I usually mention, any follow-up questions or inquiries to our IR department here in Santiago. Thank you, and good luck to everyone.
Thank you. This concludes today's presentation. You may disconnect your line at this time, and have a nice day.